Well, welcome. This is the fourth and the last, and it's called Imparting Your Very Life. Last week's are back there, and all the other ones that we've done, they're either in the book or are back there, all the other notes that we've got. It's kind of been an order to the thing. The first session was Keys of Successful Parenting, and what we tried to do there was attempt to just look at some keys, some very important things that are necessary just to open the doors and get into where we can really touch our child's lives. The second was They Call Me Dad, and that was, of course, was about the importance of a father in parenting. And even if the father is distant or not in the same home with the parents, he still plays an important role. Third session was Conquering the Land of Parenting. That was my favorite. Yeah, you like that one? That was pretty good. It's the thought was is that when we become parents, it's like entering a new land, a land that's full of giants and Canaanites. and you know, and every time your child grows to a new age level, you got a new giant and a new Canaanite you got to deal with. But God gave us some principles there to live in a land that's flowing with milk and honey. So today is Imparting Your Very Life. We all want the very best for our children. We want them to be healthy. We want them to develop positive and good relationships that will build them up and help them do well in life. We want them to do well in school, and we want them to have a good life. We also want them to have a dynamic relationship with Jesus Christ. Now, this is true if you're a Christ follower, and it's true for everyone in this room. We want them to have a dynamic relationship with Jesus. And I believe that this is accomplished by imparting our souls or our life into them. And so that's what I want to talk about tonight. In the NASB version here of 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 7, it says this. Paul says, "But we proved to be gentle among you as a nursing mother." I like that. "Tenderly, as a nursing mother tenderly cares for her own children, having so fond and affection for you, we were well pleased to impart to you not only the gospel of God, but also our own lives." Our own lives. That's your first fill-in. "Because you had become very dear to us." And then in the King James Version, it says that we have imparted our very souls, our own souls. To you. Paul connected parenting and imparting of the soul, and he connected the thoughts of that as a nursing mother. And the picture that he gives us here is a mother with a babe laying on her chest, nursing it. And more than is being given than milk. Love is being given. Time is being given. Compassion, care, touching, all of these things are given. She's giving her very soul to that child. And this is the picture that Paul is painting for us. And he says is that what he's done for those at Thessalonica is like that. He said, you know, we've nursed you. And we've not only just given you a religious theory, you know, we've not only just given you some doctrine, but what we've tried to do as well is impart to you our lives, our souls, how we think, how life is supposed to operate and work. So how do we do that? How do we impart our souls, or how do we impart our very lives to our children? So I think there are six basic things that I want to talk about in this session, and hopefully we'll get done in time maybe to answer a few more questions for you. But I think there are six basic biblical principles that we need to look at. And the first one is the connecting point that I want to talk about is affirmation. Affirmation. When you're talking to kids, and of course now we're not just with the little ones. We're talking here as you know, those close to teenage years or in the teenage years. The things that I hear a lot as I talk to children in that age group is they say, my parents don't understand me. And you know, most of the time they're right. I don't understand them. And you know, I don't think anybody really understands them, but if we let them know that we don't understand them, we've done them a disservice. So when they tell me that, I don't let them know that. I don't let them know that I really don't understand what they're about or what they're doing or why they did what they did. But rather, I want to attempt to affirm them. And this is the thought of affirmation is that you realize that their feelings are real. Now, sometimes, you know, especially with children, some of the things they get involved in or that they get wrapped up in seem so unimportant. Some of the things that they get their feelings hurt about or these kinds of things, they seem so unimportant to us, but they're very real to them. So real, they make them cry. They'll make them lose friendships. They're very, very real. And so the thing that I want to try to point out first of all is that we need to affirm them. We need to let them know that we realize that they're really going through something. So those things are real. Affirmation tells a child that he or she is experiencing real feelings. They're not making this stuff up. This is how they really feel. It tells them that we care how they feel. We care about how they're feeling. And when we affirm something, it's like Paul says here in 1 Corinthians, when the child is happy, let's rejoice with the child. Let's be happy because the child's happy. And when the child isn't happy, when the child is sad or hurting, they really don't want a pep talk. You know, that what they really want you to do is hurt with them and try to experience and feel, you know, what they're feeling. So 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 26 says, "And whether one member suffer, all the members suffer with it. Or one member be honored, all members rejoice with it." And of course, he's talking about the church here. But the church is just a mimic of a home. Or the home is a mimic of a church, however we want to approach that. But so when one member in our home is hurting, we don't need to push it off as though it's not important, because it is important. And this child needs affirmation. And something that I thought about, you know, as our children, their peers affirm them. Their peers don't correct them. Their peers affirm them. And their peers understand how they're feeling because they've had the same things happen to them. And so their peers are affirming them. And they don't say to their peers that their peers don't understand them. They know their peers do understand them. So they're not looking for us to correct them or even give them advice when they're hurting. What they're really wanting is an affirmation that we really realize that they are hurting and the feelings that they're experiencing are very real. Then the second connecting point that I want to talk about is acceptance. Romans 15:7 says, "Accept one another then, just as Christ accepted you," in order to bring praise to God. Anyway, acceptance is embracing a person, or your child in this case, for who the person is rather than what the person does or has done. I know, we want to accept our children no matter what they have done. And I know that we think that we do accept them. We think that no matter what the child did or has done, that we would never not accept our child. But let me just throw this out to you. What if your child became a homosexual? And the reason that I'm using this particular example is because I have a friend who experienced that. His son, one of his sons, became a homosexual. They think they know who they are. Children think they know who they are. And we know they don't know really who they are yet. They're still learning and finding themselves. And whether they know who they are or don't know who they are, it doesn't matter. We still accept them. A friend of mine had a son who became homosexual. And one day my friend just poured his heart out to me, poured his soul out, told me all about it and the rejection that the family felt, the family felt rejected by him, by the son, and of course the son felt very rejected by the family. And that didn't change anything, so I just listened to my friend talk for a while and just listened to him, and basically what he was telling me is he had rejected his son. And I finally said, well, let me ask you a question. I said, you know the answer, but I said, would Jesus accept your son as he is, or make your son get his life straightened out before he would accept him? You know, as my friend was saying, if he would just get straightened out, if he'd stop that lifestyle, then he'd have all kind of fun, relationships and all this stuff. So I was asking him, I said, well, is that what Jesus would make him do? Would Jesus make him get his life straightened out before he would accept him? And he said, no. And I said, well, you're an image of the Heavenly Father. You're giving an image to your son of what the Heavenly Father is. And if you reject him, then what's going to happen is he feels as though his Heavenly Father is going to reject him. And I said, the only way he's ever going to get his life straightened out is with Jesus. The only way he'll ever overcome this is to have Jesus in his life. And I said, but you've got to love him and you've got to accept him. And I'm not saying that telling him what he's doing is right, but just accept the person and express to him that he is accepted. He took my advice. He took it to heart. He called me just a short time back and was telling me the tremendous advancements that they've made in their relationship. And I don't want to linger here too much, but I asked him, I said, what's his friend's name? He kept calling him his friend. He's his friend. And I said, well, what's his friend's name? I said, do you know? He says, yeah, I know his name. And he told me what his name was. And I said, well, don't call him his friend. Call the guy by his name. I said, you know, just do something that lets your son know that you're interested in his life, though you don't agree with it. I said, you don't have to tell him you don't agree with it. He knows you don't agree with it. I said, but accept your son. So I think that acceptance of our children, no matter what they do, is so vital in bringing them into a place where we can impart our very souls, our very principles, our thoughts, the way that we believe that life should be, our very souls. I think that if they don't feel accepted by us, then we're not going to have a chance in hell of getting them where, you know, to receive Jesus. I don't know why I said that. As I started, I should have added the snowball part. That would have been a little bit better. But connecting point number three, appreciation. 1 Corinthians 16:18 says this: they have cheered me greatly and have been a wonderful encouragement to me, as I am sure they were to you too. I hope you properly appreciate the work of such men as they. What was interesting to me about this particular verse is that Paul's approach, Paul says here that appreciation greatly cheered him, and it was a wonderful encouragement because he appreciated them. Appreciation encourages, and appreciation cheers the children up. I had a very young man in our congregation that told me once. He was about 13 at the time when he said it. He says, you have impacted my life because you haven't treated me like a child. He says, let me explain what I'm trying to say. He says, you've appreciated what I was able to bring to the table, what I was able to do. And though it may not have been what an adult could do, you appreciated what I could do. And I'm watching this individual become a very good person and watching him mature into a splendid adult. And so the fill in there, appreciation says that you are doing, what you are doing matters and that you are significant. The children need to know that they matter and that they're significant. We need to find something, anything, to express appreciation to them. I read a major magazine. Well, I read a writing that was referring to this major magazine article. and it reported 8 key things that parents could do to help their children excel in school. And one of those 8 things was applaud the effort. Now, you know, that's difficult to do. You know, your child's capable of making A's and they're making D's or C's, and how do you applaud the effort? You know, it's sort of a reverse psychology thing. You know, we find something to say, you did good here, or I'm proud of you for trying. And most of the time, they didn't give it their best effort. Most of the time, you know, they were lazy. Most of the time, you couldn't beat them with a stick and make them do it. But if we can appreciate and somehow encourage them, as Paul referred to in this verse, he says it was a wonderful encouragement, how it cheered them on. You know, if we can find a way to appreciate what they do, just say, you know, you tried. You know, you tried, and I'm proud of you for trying. Appreciation, a little appreciation goes a long ways. It does with all of us. You know, people at church, you know, I'll write them a little card or just pat them on the back, you know, or something, and it just encourages them, and it does me. You know, somebody come up to me, and Casey's really good about this. Casey come up to me and said, man, that was good today. You know, he doesn't say it every week because every week it's not good, but he come up and he'll say, man, it was really good this week. You know, and he just encourages me. You know? But anyway, a little encouragement does so much for all of us. We all need encouragement, and so do our children. Connecting point number 4. Availability. Colossians 3:11 says this: in this new life, one's nationality or race or education or social position is unimportant. Such things mean nothing. Whether a person has Christ is what matters, and he is equally available to all. Availability means time. If we make ourselves available to our children, it's a lot of time. And especially, you know, look at, you know, you guys got 4, and you know, and you know, you got all these kids. You know, how do you make yourself available to all of these needs? You know, that are going on, and it requires so much time. It does. But by not finding the time, what we're saying is that other things are more important than you. By finding the time, we're doing the opposite. We're telling them nothing is more important than you. And there are things that we've got to get done. You know, there are things that we've got to deal with and take care of right now. But most of the times, if we're all honest with ourselves, most of the times what we're doing is what we really want to do. And we're putting the kid on the back burner. And we'll get to the kid when we can. Most of the time. Now, it's not that way all the time. But what we really need to think about is our availability to the child and making the child on the front burner, making them, getting them up there where they need to be. I remember back when we were raising our kids. And, you know, I was overscheduled, and so were the kids. I was busy all the time, you know, doing my work and my job and all the things that I did. And then there was Bonnie. She played basketball. She was a cheerleader. You know, she was doing all the youth group things at church and doing the school activities and those things. And here's Lance, and he's playing football, baseball, basketball, and he's doing all the church activities, and he's very scholastic and all involved with the school. And so they're busy and I'm busy. And everybody's so scheduled. There's no place. There's no time. You just have still time with the family. And so what sometimes you have to do is, rather than scheduling another event to take the kids to, just say, listen, we just got to pencil in here. We got to pencil in a time just for us. And just sit down. Rather than going to another soccer game or signing up for this particular event or for that particular thing, say, listen, we're just going to take this time and we're just going to have family time. I think that's time well spent. Connecting point 5. 2 Corinthians 6:12. We are not without our affection from you. We are not withholding our affection from you, but you are withholding yours from us. As a fair exchange, I speak as to my children, open wide your hearts also.
It was, this verse interested me because Paul's way of getting someone to open their hearts to return affection was by giving affection. Paul figured out that if I give affection, if I sow affection, we all know those principles. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. Whatever man sows, that too shall he also reap. If he's sowing affection, then hearts are going to open and he's going to get back affection. And it was interesting that he even used the term, I speak as to my children. So affection is something that we've all, you know, we just need to make sure that we're making sure we're giving it to our children. I want to read this from Josh McDowell. It's out of an article that I read from him. It says that parental affection to a child is like water to a plant or food for the starving. Affection meets basic physical and psychological needs that don't change as children grow older. Often parents hug and kiss children when they are young, but do so less the older they get. Often teens brush their parents away, insisting that they are grown up and don't need it. Don't believe them. Kids at any age need affection. If they don't get it, they'll fulfill that need in the wrong way. Showing affection creates an all-important atmosphere in which your children can feel secure. Affection should be expressed in a variety of ways, through notes, hugs, and verbally. Telling your children you love them speaks volumes. Not only is it important for parents to express love to their children, but children also derive security in seeing affection displayed between their parents. When I leave a love note for my wife and my children see it, it says to them, Dad loves Mom and is committed to her. Nothing builds greater security than that. One time we had a prophet. He was ministering here. And at that time, Lance and Bonnie had married. Lance was still living at home with us. And so the prophet and his family were staying at our home. And and we were sitting around. We would be talking every night while he was here. And Lance would, just before he would go to bed, he would stand up, walk over to my chair, and lean down and kiss me and say, I love you, and hug me. And he'd go to his mother, and Lance was in his late 20s, mid to late 20s now. And he'd go to his mother, and he'd do the same thing. Well, this so impressed this guy, this prophet, so impressed him that we went down to a conference where he was speaking one time, and he was preaching about that event. He said, hey, I'm going to talk about you tonight. He said, I didn't know you were coming anyway. He said, but it wouldn't change anything. He said, I'm still going to talk about it. I said, what are you going to talk about? He said, you'll hear. So he shared about that, and it so knocked him out that here was this grown man, you know, and he'd walk over there and kiss his dad goodnight and hug him, and he'd walk over and kiss his mother goodnight, and it wasn't just a peck. I mean, he kissed me on the mouth. I mean, you know, I mean, I didn't know if I was going to say that or not. I did, so I did. But I mean, it's true affection, and I guess I got that from my dad. My dad was a real caring person. He was a real, you know, kind of a huggy guy. And he would never leave me without hugging me and kissing me and saying, I love you, Delbert. Delbert Ray. That's what he always said. I love you, Delbert Ray. And you know, and so I got that from him. And, you know, and Judy wasn't raised in a home like that. Judy's home was, they were distant, you know. She wasn't raised in a home where there was this going on. So she adapted. And now it's still that way. What day was it? The 9th, Judy's birthday. We went down to Smyrna and ate supper for Judy's birthday, and went out. And the boys were there, the McGrand boys and Bonnie and Lance and Jennifer. And so we come out from eating. We all were heading for our cars. We were all driving in different vehicles. And before we left, everybody's over there, you know, right in front of this restaurant, hugging and kissing each other and saying, I love you. And it's grown on the grandkids now. And now here's little Max hugging on my leg, telling me, love you, oh, daddy. And here's and Jack has a hard time. Jack has a difficult time with goodbyes because he just loves people and he doesn't want to say goodbye. He doesn't want you to go. And he kind of pouts up a little bit, you know, but then, you know, I'll finally get a high five or something from him, but he's got to where he'll help me. But I wasn't 2 miles down the road. My cell phone rang and it's Jack. He's calling. He said, oh, daddy, I didn't tell you bye. I love you. Bye. But the point is that they need this affection. And we need it. You know, I mean, this just thrills me, boy. I mean, it just tickles me. Not just because they're my grandkids, but because I know I'm imparting my very soul to them. I'm imparting my life to them. So, but anyway. But they need it, and we need it, and you know, and so, but you have to work at it. I mean, like Judy had to work at it. It was distant for her. I mean, her daddy, I don't know if her daddy ever told her that he loved her. Maybe late, just before he passed away, but it was not a common thing in their home. But it was in my home. And, you know, and so we were able to bring that in, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful thing now. And Jody's has a difficult time with it. Well, you know, Jody's this high eagle temperament, and he has a difficult time with any kind of touch. You know, you don't invade his space. You know, he's got his area. You know, he does not like it invaded, and you know, but he's learning, and he's got to where, you know, he just loves now, and he's much more loving than he was. Okay, last connecting point. Did we get all the blanks filled in that one? Yeah. Okay. Number 6, accountability. Ephesians 5:21 says, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Accountability is a bad word. But if you're able to impart accountability into your children, you have probably been a successful parent. The concepts that go along with accountability are submission and obedience. And they're just really, really bad words in our society today. Because what they mean is that I submit to the needs of others. I submit to the need of another to which I am accountable to. I put my wants on the back burners and let your wants come forward. And it's difficult. Accountability means that I'm willing to be called into account and explain my actions, why I did something, and be responsible for my actions. So how do we do this? How do we impart accountability, you know, to children? Well, there's two things that I think make it possible. First of all, our children must see us as willingly accountable. Willingly accountable. What I mean by that is if we're grudgingly accountable, that's the way they're going to learn accountability. If we're sitting at the table and we're talking about the boss and we say, well, I did it, but bless God, I told him. So, you know, I told him what I thought, but I did it. But, well, that's not willing accountability. You know, it's some form of submission, I suppose, but it's not the accountability you want from your children, because then what your children are going to respond as they see how you were accountable, they're going to respond to us the same way. They're going to respond to any authority the same way. They'll do it, but grudgingly. And they'll talk about you, and they'll talk about whoever they're supposed to be accountable to. They're going to talk about them negatively, and it works into their lives. That unwilling or that grudging accountability. If they hear us willingly be accountable to something, then that's what they will do as well. I know a family whose pastor, well, actually, they went to the pastor and they said, will you help us in this situation? We're here, and they explained the situation. And they said, now correct us. And they had done some things erroneously, so the pastor corrected them. And they had a kid, they had a child, that was really giving them fits. This child was just in all sorts of rebellion and all sorts of you know, just this really bad attitude that this child had. And so the child was aware of the couple's, the parents' submission to their pastor. And he said to them, why do you always do what he says? Why do you let him tell you what to do? And the parents said, because whenever he's told us something, it worked. We've never gone wrong by doing what he said. Well, the child just sort of shrugged his shoulders and went off and continued in his rebellion for a season. Finally, the kid hit bottom. He just slammed the bottom. Well, the pastor was still there for the child and encouraged the child and prayed for the child and was there for the child. And one day in talking with the child, he told him, he said, listen, if you will just do what your parents say do, your life's going to be a whole lot better and things are going to go well with you. So, not long after that, the child had a decision to make. Am I going to do what I want to do, what my friends want me to do, or am I going to do what my parents want me to do? And he opted to do what his parents wanted him to do. This fascinated the parents, so the parents asked him, so why did you do what we wanted you to do? So, well, Pastor said that if I would do what you tell me to do, that my life would be better and things would go well for me. And since I've done that, they have. My point in relaying that story is that the child was able to see the parents willfully submit, willfully be accountable to an authority, to someone that would bless their lives. And when he saw that and he saw that it worked for them, then he eventually applied that to his life as well. So there's that part of it. There's this willful accountability. And then the second thing that I think is necessary if we're going to impart our very soul as far as being accountable into our children, the second part is I think they need to see us be accountable to them. I want to work here just a minute, but they need to see that we can be accountable to them. Now, I'm not talking about putting them in charge. You know, that's not what I'm talking about. But let me give you these few examples that I wrote down here. Bonnie had told Jack, now Jack's 4 years old, Bonnie had told Jack that calling somebody stupid is wrong. Well, he and Max were riding in our car and I was driving and Judy and I were having this discussion about a situation. And I said something like this. I said, if this person thinks that God's going to let them by with that, he's stupid. Jack said, aw, Daddy. I said, yeah, baby. He said, it's not nice to call somebody stupid. I said, you're right. You're exactly right. And I said, thank you for telling me that because I know better and I appreciate you correcting me on that. And if I ever do that, again, you let me know, okay? Max has always corrected me about my not buckling my seatbelt. He sits right behind me so he can see it. And it's got to be a game with him. He always looks to see if all daddy's got his seatbelt buckled. And if it's not buckled, he'll tell me. I said, thank you, Max. I said, make me do right. Make me do right. Call me into account, you know. I don't use that word, but I say, make me do right. And so, you know, and on a more serious note, and I can't give you a lot of details, but not long ago, this wasn't that long ago, I did something really, really dumb. And I was ashamed of myself. I really dropped the ball to be what I am and who I am and do what I do. I really dropped the ball. And this hadn't been that long ago, so you know, it's not like I'm talking years and years back. It hasn't been a year ago. So, but anyway, it's kind of recent. And I really did wrong. And so the children, Bonnie and Lance and Jody, son-in-law, wanted to come talk to me about it. And I said, okay, fine. And so they came over to the house, and the first thing they said was, now your dad, and we can't correct you, but here's how we feel. They shared. And I listened, and they were right. And I says, now let me tell you. I said, I am dad, but you can correct me because what I did was wrong. And I need to be accountable. You know, you would think that would damage our relationship, that it somehow would lessen how they would think of father, of dad. But you know what enhanced it instead? Because they saw that I was serious about what I say and about what I do, and that I need to be accountable. So it enhances their your relationship with your child. And let them tell you, you know, when you tell them to tell you, you know, when you said, okay, here's how we're going to do, and we do as parents something totally different. When we say something we shouldn't say, or we did something we shouldn't have done, let them correct us and tell them, thank you. I needed correcting there. So anyway, accountability is something that's very difficult to work into our children, but if we don't make them accountable, they're going to go through life rebelling against every authority. And that's not good. Things don't go well in life when you live a life of rebellion against everything. So I've been able to impart my very soul to my children, and honestly, and I'm saying this humbly, but honestly, I don't know of anyone whose soul I would want imparted to my children other than mine and my wife's. And that's not boasting, but I feel like you probably feel the same way about your kids. That you want your kids to have your spirit, have your soul, have your very life in them, your principles, your morals, what you live for. And these are things that happen by us continuously availing ourselves to them and letting them know that they can impart into our lives as well. So, last paragraph here, as we seek to show affirmation, acceptance, appreciation, availability, and affection, and accountability to our children, we will open doors into their hearts and lives in order to impart our very souls, our beliefs, our convictions. It works. It worked for me. It worked for Paul. It works. And if we'll work, it'll work for you. And my prayer here is my prayer. And we've been through it. I hope you got something out of these sessions. You know, I hope you there was something shared somewhere along the way that helped you somewhere. But I pray that we can one day echo Paul's words as he wrote to those same Thessalonians that he said, I imparted my very soul to you. And it's the last fill-in that you got. Indeed, you are our glory and joy. My children are my glory and my joy. You know, I'm so proud of them. They make me look good. You know, they look at my kids and you say, man, God did something right, you know? And I want that to be how you feel. I want you to be able to one day be able to stand in a room in front of people and you can say, you know, my kids are my glory and my kids are my joy. Amen? Thank you. Okay, any questions about this first? Anything that I've said here? Any questions about any of this first? Hey, listen. I think it's that the example of the homosexual situation that I relayed to you. You don't approve of what they do, but you accept the person. You let them know that you love them and that you accept them, but you disapprove of the actions and the things that they're doing. It's like God accepts us, but He lets us know through His Word, through ministries and those things that are wrong. He still loves us. But anyway, did I answer? I don't guess I answered it for you.
In our situation, we did that. We loved you, but we did not accept what the stand that you've taken here. We don't want it from our face. We don't want it from our children's
right.
faces.
Right.
Don't bring your friend to family functions. We don't want that in front of our face. And so this person moved away. And now it's really struggling. It's hard for us to watch him struggle, knowing that Jesus is the answer to the struggle,
right.
But yet he has totally turned us back on.
Well, I think you drew the line. He said, okay, here's here's what we will and we won't. We can't allow for our sake of our children, whatever. An occasional phone call, how you doing? You know, we're praying for you. We love you. You know, how's life going? We're praying for you. Just, you know, that type of encouragement, I think, would be a part of it, not totally. Drop him, her, him, whatever, the person, a note. And just so, hey, you know, thinking about you. Yeah. Oh, well, I know you do. You wouldn't. And yeah. And you do. I mean, this, like my friend, whose son. Now, he didn't want that around his other children, you know. And so he was struggling. How do I do this? You know, how do I keep him from influencing, you know, my other children and at the same time love on this kid?
Well, off the diving board there. Stand in our families against something that big, that, you know, that obvious of a sin, we also have to take a stand against the ones that aren't that obvious, the things that lying and cheating and gossip and murmuring and gluttony and all those other things. It's the same thing.
Yeah, right.
But when you start taking a stand against all those things, you just, your life.
Well, you're back in a corner. And no, you know, nobody can approach you, and you can't approach anyone.
You don't expect perfection, because that will never happen on this earth. But
we're
not
throwing stones.
No.
That's what their first defense.
Right. Because we're not perfect either.
We're backwards.
Oh, really? You're not perfect. You got blemishes.
You know, you need to go a step further past that.
Sure.
You know?
Sure.
Just that.
It gets difficult.
We really divided our family, and it's never been the same.
Not yet.
But it's not over yet.
Right.
I like the not yet. Yeah. But I think just loving, but not approving of the fault or the sin, but approving of the person. And we love you as a person, but I can't approve of your lifestyle or whatever. And that's what my friend did. He knows that he doesn't approve of his lifestyle, of his son's lifestyle. But at the same time, he has to accept his son. So it's a hot iron. Handle with care. Yeah, sure enough. 2 minutes. Anything else? Quickly. You guys got it all together back then, you know? I think the last time we answered lots of questions, and I feel like, you know, that some of you guys had asked some of those questions, and like dating or the talk, you know, and those kinds of things. We got into all of that, and so that's there for you too. Plus, there's the audio tapes if you wanna get those. So. Valerie.
You know, it's not just the homosexual thing. It's like if you have a family member who does whatever, which I'm off the diving board, that's it. Live the most unchristian life, mm-hmm. and still want to come around. I cannot let my kids accept these people as friends, as people that are going to hang around with. I just can't do it because I don't want that rubbing off on my girls.
Again. You know, you accept the person. Now we're talking your children. We're not talking, you know,
well,
specifically.
You know, I want my kids to love everybody,
right.
But I don't want them to accept
right.
the way
right. they I think in your case, with that, you just need to have a talk with the girls and say, okay, here's why. And you have to understand here's why. But what I'm specifically talking about in this lesson was how we handle our own children. You know, we got to love them and we approve of them and accept them. Whatever they've done. So I'm not so much talking about, you know, your children's friends. Now you do have to draw lines and boundaries. Yes, you still have to do that, and you accept the person like Jesus would. But you can't allow just anything and everything. Yeah, I agree.
So when the child brings home a C, and you know that he's capable of an A, and you haven't checked the book the entire year, you think it's not an A. We were there.
Why don't you guys go on so that I won't get in trouble?
How do you say, yes, I'm proud of you for trying without strangling him?
That's the age-old question, man.
One teacher actually told me that I had unrealistic expectations. far as career loading was concerned. Because I expected A's and B's. I said, I know he's capable of it. She said, it's too hard on him. He is what he is.
No, well, that's partially true. That's partially true. But I think if we lower the standard, and that's one thing that, of course, the whole school system has done is lower the standard. Therefore, you know, you don't have to excel to he can make C's without studying. You know, that's what I'm talking about. So. Well, it's not that you're proud of it. It's that. But you encourage him, or in your case, him. What you do is you encourage the child by finding something, and I just use that particular thing because I'd read that in an article. But you find something to encourage him, some way in that area that you want him to do better at. You find some way to encourage him in that area. So, you know, whatever that there's of all the subjects, there has to be one or so that maybe he does a little better in, and you can just applaud that. And say, man, you did great here. You know, I'm so proud of you. You know, little Jack and Max, we always find him something. You know, went to a ball game down there the other day, and we did this with our kids too. Judy was great at this. She taught me how to do this, but she'd always find something to just pat him on the back. Boy, you did great. So we're down at a little ball game, you know, these little 3-4-year-olds playing T League, you know, and stuff. And yeah, they can't hit it past the pitcher, you know. And they run and they, man, hey, Jack, you know, hey, buddy, yeah, man, you whacked it that time, didn't you? You know, and so he just smiles and his chest comes out. So my point is find something, you know, just encourage them because next time they're going to even try harder. So it's kind of a reverse psychology. Find a way to encourage them instead of discouraging them. You know, they're expecting you to beat them. You know, flip it around and just use a little bit of encouragement and see if you can find something to say, man, you did good. Proud of you, man. Great. Way to go.
Well, now they still got
a package. Yeah. He knows your expectations. You don't have to keep telling him your expectations. You don't have to keep telling him you can do better. He knows he can do better. So it's finding a way to like that verse. That verse is so fascinating to me because the way Paul encouraged was by giving encouragement. You know? And so the way we're going to reap back what we sow. And it's just the way it's going to work.
We did have one improvement.
There you go.
Did
you brag on that improvement? Did you say, man, that's great, man. I'm so proud of you.
I wanted to choke him again. Because the last time when he worked the windshield.
We're making progress. Okay, and another thing.
Thank you.
Another thing is you guys got great kids. I mean, you guys have got great, great kids. All, you know, everybody that's in this room, we got some of the greatest kids here, you know. And though we really want them to do the best they possibly can, they're not always going to do it. But we can find something to say, man, way to go. You know, I'm so proud of you. And all of them probably going to end up better than any of us. Then we made it. And we made it. That's not a cop-out. That's not saying, okay, you know, I made it, you're going to make it. You know, I'm not copping out here. But I am saying that they're probably going to excel the level that we did. And their parents, our parents that didn't know what we know. We've got so much more understanding and so much more on the ball. And if we'll just take it and apply it and use it, I'm telling you, we're going to have some fantastic fruit.
Dave?
You're right.
I guess that's what we used to show up for the beans sometimes. If he just sits down and talks to me, and he's really bright. You know, but it's not the way I see it. But you know,
but you're right.
The way the word is really is, you know, been open. I guess that makes me mad.
Yes, sir.
Really is.
They are smart. Those kids, I mean, it's hard to pull it over on these kids. It's difficult to trick these kids, man. One of the things that Jody started coming to church here a long, long time ago, I don't know if you, does anybody remember him? Had long hair. He was this, you know, he was this really rebellious kid. I mean, and he was, and his mother got me at the hospital one day. She came to me. I didn't know her from anybody. She started talking to me. I didn't know who this woman was. You know? And she came to me and she said, "I want to thank you." "For what? Who are you?" "I want to thank you. I'm Jody's mother." And I still really wasn't with her, you know. And it wasn't until we walked off that Judy told me who I didn't know who her son was. I didn't have the faintest idea that he would be my son-in-law one day, you know. But we walked off, and Judy told me. But anyway, what she told me was, his life has so changed. I've been trying to get him to get a haircut for 3 years. He said he's cut his hair. You know, he's driving better. He's not causing me trouble, you know, and all this stuff. And you know what it was. And he told me, he said, "When I came there," he said, "I just heard truth." He says, you know, it wasn't religion. It wasn't this, you know, you can't do this and you can't do that. You just made it there. And here's how it works. Here's how life works. And he says, "I just saw that." And so kids are smart. That's what I'm trying to say. Kids are smart. And you have a difficult time tricking kids. You know, they're on the ball, and so we got to realize that, and we got to be smarter. Amen.
Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
How do you deal
with the religions? What do you? You ain't got any of that.
How do you? Now that I've got Rebecca more and more.
Oh, okay.
Is losing
his mind. Well, we didn't play fair. Now we let that. And you've heard me say that before. I guess maybe you have. It's been said in the class a couple of times. We didn't play fair. Now, what I'm talking about, we didn't, just because we let this one do it, we didn't let this one do it. They earned our trust. They earned the ability to do things. And if this one did all the things that he or she was supposed to do, then they got to do it. And if the other one, and so we didn't have a lot of this rivalry because it wasn't like they were rivaling each other. They had to satisfy us, and if we could get that across to them, where they're not in competition with each other, you know, what they had to do was come to where the expectations that we had, and then they would get to do what they wanted to do. We could let Lance do just about anything, and I know I've beat up on Bonnie so badly, you know, in this thing, but Bonnie was our, you know, problem kid. And I mean, she would just take you to the limits. She would just stretch you out there. Now, Lance, very obedient kid, and he earned our. When he told me he was going somewhere, and I checked to find out, and I didn't do that. They tell you they're gonna go somewhere. You better let them know that you're gonna check to see if they're there, because if they don't think you're gonna check on them, they're not going. They're gonna tell you they're going, but they're going somewhere else. But he would always be where he said he was going to be. He would do what he said. He'd be home when he said he was supposed to be. Bonnie wasn't that way. And so we had different standards. Just because we would let Lance do it didn't mean Bonnie was going to get to do it. And she knew it. And she knew why. Bonnie, we can't trust you. You weren't where you said you were going to be. You didn't do what you said you were going to do. You know, so I can't trust you yet, honey. I love you. You know, and you know I love you. We had one of the best conversations on the telephone. I called her the other day. I was asking her something because I told her I was going to use her as an example. I think it was last week that I did it. And I said, "Now, what do you think?" It was about dating. So we didn't let Bonnie date until, never single date. She was 22 years old when Jody proposed to her, and she had never been on a single date. Now, I know that sounds weird, you know, but that's how it was. And I asked her, I said, "Now, what do you think about that?" And she said, "Best thing in the world for me." She says, "I look back at it now." She says, "I really see how much you loved me." She says, "I didn't see that at the time." She says, "But I see it now." And she says, "It's probably because of that, you know, I've got what I've got now. And I am who I am now." So we didn't have that civil rivalry thing, sibling rivalry thing. We had, you know, we just didn't play the game. We didn't let them do that to us. Hey, look, you know, this is like, you know, a new world for me too. I'm learning. And if I step on your toes, I'm not trying to hurt you intentionally. You know, that's the last thing in the world I'd ever do, Logan, is hurt you.
Right.
So, you know, if I do, you just let me know, and I'll see what I can do if I can adjust it. But if I'll make mistakes. I think we got to let our kids know that we make mistakes. And just because we're mom and dad doesn't mean we're perfect. And so we've got to let them know, hey, look, I'll blow it sometimes. But if I do, I'll try not to do it again. And it worked for us.
I'll try
it. Good, good.
Do you think you got it on this first trip with six flags with his friends?
Well, Mama was praying.
Yeah. And Kyle, since they got there, Kyle, and then on the way back, at Kyle.
Good. All right, we ready?
Yes.
Good, good, good. Delane, pray for us, please. Amen. Amen. Come on in, Val. Well, welcome. This is the fourth and the last. And it's called Imparting Your Very Life. Last week's are back there, and all the other ones that we've done, they're either in the book or are back there. All the other notes that we've got. It's kind of been an order to the thing. The first session was Keys of Successful Parenting.
And what we tried to do there was attempt to just look at some keys, some very important things that are necessary just to open the doors and get into where we can really touch our child's lives. The second was They Call Me Dad, and that was, of course, was about the importance of a father in parenting. And even if the father is distant or not in the same home with the parents, he still plays an important role. Third session was Conquering the Land of Parenting. That was my favorite. Yeah, you like that one? That was pretty good. It's the thought was is that when we become parents, it's like entering a new land, a land that's full of giants and Canaanites. And you know, and every time your child grows to a new age level, you got a new giant and a new Canaanite you got to deal with. But God gave us some principles there to live in a land that's flowing with milk and honey. So today is imparting your very life. We all want the very best for our children. We want them to be healthy. We want them to develop positive and good relationships that will build them up and help them do well in life. We want them to do well in school, and we want them to have a good life. We also want them to have a dynamic relationship with Jesus Christ. Now, this is true if you're a Christ follower, and it's true for everyone in this room. We want them to have a dynamic relationship with Jesus. And I believe that this is accomplished by imparting our souls or our life into them. And so that's what I want to talk about tonight. In the NASB version here of 1 Thessalonians chapter 2, verse 7, it says this. Paul says, "But we proved to be gentle among you as a nursing mother." I like that. "Tenderly, as a nursing mother tenderly cares for her own children, having so fond an affection for you, we were well pleased to impart to you not only the gospel of God, but also our own lives." Our own lives. That's your first fill-in. "Because you had become very dear to us." And then in the King James Version, it says that we have imparted our very souls, our own souls to you. Paul connected parenting and imparting of the soul, and he connected the thoughts of that as a nursing mother. And the picture that he gives us here is a mother with the babe laying on her chest, nursing it. And more than is being given than milk. Love is being given. Time is being given. Compassion, care, touching. All of these things are given. She's giving her very soul to that child. And this is the picture that Paul is painting for us. And he says is that what he's done for those at Thessalonica is like that. He said, you know, we've nursed you. And we've not only just given you a religious theory. You know, we've not only just given you some doctrine. But what we've tried to do as well is impart to you our lives, our souls, how we think, how life is supposed to operate and work. So how do we do that? How do we impart our souls, or how do we impart our very lives to our children? So I think there are six basic things that I want to talk about in this session, and hopefully we'll get done in time maybe to answer a few more questions for you. But I think there are six basic biblical principles that we need to look at. And the first one is the connecting point that I want to talk about is affirmation. Affirmation. When you're talking to kids, and of course now we're not just with the little ones, we're talking here as you know, those close to teenage years or in the teenage years. The things that I hear a lot as I talk to children in that age group is they say, "My parents don't understand me," and you know, most of the time they're right. I don't understand them. And you know, I don't think anybody really understands them, but if we let them know that we don't understand them, we've done them a disservice. So when they tell me that, I don't let them know that. I don't let them know that I really don't understand what they're about or what they're doing or why they did what they did. But rather, I want to attempt to affirm them. And this is the thought of affirmation is that you realize that their feelings are real. Now, sometimes, you know, especially with children, some of the things they get involved in or that they get wrapped up in seem so unimportant. Some of the things that they get their feelings hurt about or these kinds of things, they seem so unimportant to us, but they're very real to them. So real, they make them cry. They'll make them lose friendships. They're very, very real. And so the thing that I want to try to point out first of all is that we need to affirm them. We need to let them know that we realize that they're really going through something. So those things are real. Affirmation tells a child that he or she is experiencing real feelings. They're not making this stuff up. This is how they really feel. It tells them that we care how they feel. We care about how they're feeling. And when we affirm something, it's like Paul says here in 1 Corinthians, when the child is happy, let's rejoice with the child. Let's be happy because the child's happy. And when the child isn't happy, when the child is sad or hurting, they really don't want a pep talk. You know, what they really want you to do is hurt with them and try to experience and feel, you know, what they're feeling. So 1 Corinthians chapter 12, verse 26 says, "And whether one member suffer, all the members suffer with it. Or one member be honored, all members rejoice with it." And of course, he's talking about the church here. But the church is just a mimic of a home. Or the home is a mimic of a church, however we want to approach that. But so when one member in our home is hurting, we don't need to push it off as though it's not important, because it is important. And this child needs affirmation. And something that I thought about, you know, as our children, their peers affirm them. Their peers don't correct them. Their peers affirm them, and their peers understand how they're feeling because they've had the same things happen to them. And so their peers are affirming them, and they don't say to their peers that their peers don't understand them. They know their peers do understand them. So they're not looking for us to correct them or even give them advice when they're hurting. What they're really wanting is an affirmation that we really realize that they are hurting and the feelings that they're experiencing are very real. Then the second connecting point that I want to talk about is acceptance. Romans 15:7 says, "Accept one another then, just as Christ accepted you, in order to bring praise to God." Anyway, acceptance is embracing a person, or your child in this case, for who the person is rather than what the person does or has done. I know, we want to accept our children no matter what they have done. And I know that we think that we do accept them. We think that no matter what the child did or has done, that we would never not accept our child. But let me just throw this out to you. What if your child became a homosexual? And the reason that I'm using this particular example is because I have a friend who experienced that. His son, one of his sons, became a homosexual. They think they know who they are. Children think they know who they are. And we know they don't know really who they are yet. They're still learning and finding themselves. And whether they know who they are or don't know who they are, it doesn't matter. We still accept them. A friend of mine had a son who became homosexual. And one day my friend just poured his heart out to me, poured his soul out, and told me all about it and the rejection that the family felt. The family felt rejected by him, by the son, and of course the son felt very rejected by the family. And that didn't change anything, so I just listened to my friend talk for a while and just listened to him, and basically what he was telling me is he had rejected his son.
And I finally said, well, let me ask you a question. I said, you know the answer, but I said, would Jesus accept your son as he is, or make your son get his life straightened out before he would accept him? You know, as my friend was saying, if he would just get straightened out, if he'd stop that lifestyle, then he'd have all kind of fun and relationships and all this stuff. So I was asking him, I said, well, is that what Jesus would make him do? Would Jesus make him get his life straightened out before he would accept him? And he said, no. And I said, well, you're an image of the Heavenly Father. You're giving an image to your son of what the Heavenly Father is. And if you reject him, then what's going to happen is he feels as though his Heavenly Father is going to reject him. And I said, the only way he's ever going to get his life straightened out is with Jesus. The only way he'll ever overcome this is to have Jesus in his life. And I said, but you've got to love him and you've got to accept him. And I'm not saying that telling him what he's doing is right, but just accept the person and express to him that he is accepted. He took my advice. He took it to heart. He called me just a short time back and was telling me the tremendous advancements that they've made in their relationship. And I don't want to linger here too much, but I asked him, I said, what's his friend's name? He kept calling him his friend. He's his friend. And I said, well, what's his friend's name? I said, do you know? He says, yeah, I know his name. And he told me what his name was. And I says, well, don't call him his friend. Call the guy by his name. I said, you know, just do something that lets your son know that you're interested in his life, though you don't agree with it. I said, you don't have to tell him you don't agree with it. He knows you don't agree with it. I said, but accept your son. So I think that acceptance of our children, no matter what they do, is so vital in bringing them into a place where we can impart our very souls, our very principles, our thoughts, the way that we believe that life should be, our very souls. I think that if they don't feel accepted by us, then we're not going to have a chance in hell of getting them where, you know, to receive Jesus. I don't know why I said that. As I started, I should have added the snowball part. That would have been a little bit better. But connecting point number three, appreciation. 1 Corinthians 16:18 says this: they have cheered me greatly and have been a wonderful encouragement to me, as I am sure they were to you too. I hope you properly appreciate the work of such men as they. What was interesting to me about this particular verse is that Paul's approach, Paul says here that appreciation greatly cheered him, and it was a wonderful encouragement because he appreciated them. Appreciation encourages, and appreciation cheers the children up. I had a very young man in our congregation that told me once. He was about 13 at the time when he said it. He says, you have impacted my life because you haven't treated me like a child. He says, let me explain what I'm trying to say. He says, you've appreciated what I was able to bring to the table, what I was able to do. And though it may not have been what an adult could do, you appreciated what I could do. And I'm watching this individual become a very good person and watching him mature into a splendid adult. And so the fill in there, appreciation says that you are doing, what you are doing matters and that you are significant. The children need to know that they matter and that they're significant. We need to find something, anything, to express appreciation to them. I read a major magazine. Well, I read a writing that was referring to this major magazine article, and it reported 8 key things that parents could do to help their children excel in school. And one of those 8 things was applaud the effort. Now, it's difficult to do. You know, your child's capable of making A's and they're making D's or C's, and And how do you applaud the effort? You know, it's sort of a reverse psychology thing. You know, we find something to say. You did good here. Or I'm proud of you for trying. And most of the time, they didn't give it their best effort. Most of the time, you know, they were lazy. Most of the time, you couldn't beat them with a stick and make them do it. But if we can appreciate and somehow encourage them, as Paul referred to in this verse, he says it was a wonderful encouragement, how it cheered them on. You know, if we can find a way to appreciate what they do, just say, you know, you tried. You know, you tried, and I'm proud of you for trying. Appreciation, a little appreciation goes a long ways. It does with all of us. You know, people in church, you know, I'll write them a little card or just pat them on the back, you know, or something, and it just encourages them, and it does me. You know, somebody come up to me, and Casey's really good about this. Casey'll come up to me and say, man, that was good today. You know, he doesn't say it every week because every week it's not good, but he'll come up and he'll say, man, it was really good this week. You know, and he just encourages me. You know? But anyway, a little encouragement does so much for all of us. We all need encouragement, and so do our children. Connecting point number four. Availability. Colossians 3:11 says this. In this new life, one's nationality or race or education or social position is unimportant. Such things mean nothing. Whether a person has Christ is what matters. And he is equally available to all. Availability means time. If we make ourselves available to our children, it's a lot of time. And especially, you know, look at, you know, you guys got four, and you got all these kids. You know, how do you make yourself available to all of these needs? You know, that are going on, and it requires so much time. It does. But by not finding the time, what we're saying is that other things are more important than you. By finding the time, we're doing the opposite. We're telling them nothing is more important than you. And there are things that we've got to get done. You know, there are things that we've got to deal with and take care of right now. But most of the times, if we're all honest with ourselves, most of the times what we're doing is what we really want to do. And we're putting the kid on the back burner. And we'll get to the kid when we can. Most of the time. Now, it's not that way all the time. But what we really need to think about is our availability to the child and making the child on the front burner, getting them up there where they need to be. I remember back when we were raising our kids. And, you know, I was overscheduled, and so were the kids. I was busy all the time, you know, doing my work and my job and all the things that I did. And then there was Bonnie. She played basketball. She was a cheerleader. You know, she was doing all the youth group things at church and doing the school activities and those things. And here's Lance, and he's playing football, baseball, basketball, and he's doing all the church activities, and he's very scholastic and all involved with the school. And so they're busy and I'm busy. And everybody's so scheduled. There's no place. There's no time. You just have still time with the family. And so what sometimes you have to do is, rather than scheduling another event to take the kids to, just say, listen, we just got to pencil in here. We got to pencil in a time just for us. And just sit down. Rather than going to another soccer game or signing up for this particular event or for that particular thing, say, listen, we're just going to take this time. And we're just going to have family time. I think that's time well spent. Connecting point five. 2 Corinthians 6:12. We are not without our affection from you. We are not withholding our affection from you, but you are withholding yours from us. As a fair exchange, I speak as to my children, open wide your hearts also. This verse interested me because Paul's way of getting someone to open their hearts to return affection was by giving affection. Paul figured out that if I give affection, if I sow affection, we all know those principles. Be not deceived. God is not mocked. Whatever man sows, that too shall he also reap. If he's sowing affection, then hearts are going to open and he's going to get back affection. And it was interesting that he even used the term, I speak as to my children. So affection is something that we've all, you know, we just need to make sure that we're making sure we're giving it to our children. I want to read this from Josh McDowell. It's out of an article that I read from him. It says that parental affection to a child is like water to a plant or food for the starving. Affection meets basic physical and psychological needs that don't change as children grow older. Often parents hug and kiss children when they are young, but do so less the older they get. Often teens brush their parents away, insisting that they are grown up and don't need it. Don't believe them. Kids at any age need affection. If they don't get it, they'll fulfill that need in the wrong way. Showing affection creates an all-important atmosphere in which your children can feel secure. Affection should be expressed in a variety of ways, through notes, hugs, and verbally. Telling your children you love them speaks volumes. Not only is it important for parents to express love to their children, but children also derive security in seeing affection displayed between their parents. When I leave a love note for my wife and my children see it, it says to them, Dad loves Mom and is committed to her. Nothing builds greater security than that. One time we had a prophet. He was ministering here. And at that time, Lance and Bonnie had married. Lance was still living at home with us. And so the prophet and his family were staying at our home. And we were sitting around. We would be talking every night while he was here. And Lance would, just before he would go to bed, he would stand up, walk over to my chair, and lean down and kiss me and say, I love you, and hug me. And he'd go to his mother, and Lance was in his late 20s, mid to late 20s now. And he'd go to his mother, and he'd do the same thing. Well, this so impressed this guy, this prophet, so impressed him that we went down to a conference where he was speaking one time, and he was preaching about that event. He said, hey, I'm going to talk about you tonight. He said, I didn't know you were coming anyway. He said, but it wouldn't change anything. He said, I'm still going to talk about it. I said, what are you going to talk about? He said, you'll hear. So he shared about that, and it so knocked him out that here was this grown man, you know, and he'd walk over there and kiss his dad goodnight and hug him, and he'd walk over and kiss his mother goodnight. And it wasn't just a peck. I mean, he kissed me on the mouth. I mean, you know, I didn't know if I was going to say that or not. I did, so I did. But, I mean, it's true affection. And I guess I got that from my dad. My dad was a real caring person. He was a real, you know, kind of a huggy guy. And he would never leave me without hugging me and kissing me and saying, I love you, Delbert. Delbert Ray. That's what he always said. I love you, Delbert Ray. And you know, and so I got that from him. And, you know, and Judy wasn't raised in a home like that. Judy's home was, they were distant, you know. She wasn't raised in a home where there was this going on. So she adapted. And now it's still that way. What day was it? The 9th. Judy's birthday. We went down to Smyrna and ate supper for Judy's birthday and went out. And the boys were there, the McGrann boys and Bonnie and Lance and Jennifer. And so we come out from eating. We all were heading for our cars. We were all driving in different vehicles. And before we left, everybody's over there, you know, right in front of this restaurant, hugging and kissing each other and saying, I love you. And it's grown on the grandkids now. And now here's little Max hugging on my leg, telling me, love you all, Daddy. And here's and Jack has a hard time. Jack has a difficult time with goodbyes because he just loves people and he doesn't want to say goodbye. He doesn't want you to go. And he kind of pouts up a little bit, you know, but then, you know, I finally get a high five or something from him, but he's got to where he'll help me. But I wasn't 2 miles down the road. My cell phone rang and it's Jack. He's calling. He said, "Oh, Daddy, I didn't tell you bye. I love you. Bye." But the point is that they need this affection. And we need it. You know, I mean, this just thrills me, boy. I mean, it just tickles me. Not just because they're my grandkids, but because I know I'm imparting my very soul to them. I'm imparting my life to them. So, but anyway. But they need it, and we need it, and so. But you have to work at it. I mean, like Judy had to work at it. It was distant for her. I mean, her daddy. I don't know if her daddy ever told her that he loved her. Maybe late, just before he passed away. But it was not a common thing in their home. But it was in my home, and so we were able to bring that in, and it's just a beautiful, beautiful thing now. And Jody's has a difficult time with it. Well, you know, Jody's this high eagle temperament, and he has a difficult time with any kind of touch. You know, you don't invade his space. You know, he's got his area. You know, he does not like it invaded. And you know, but he's learning, and he's got to where, you know, he just loves now, and he's much more loving than he was. Okay, last connecting point. Did we get all the blanks filled in that one? Yeah, okay. Number 6, accountability. Ephesians 5:21 says, submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Accountability is a bad word. But if you're able to impart accountability into your children, you have probably been a successful parent. The concepts that go along with accountability are submission and obedience. And they're just really, really bad words in our society today. Because what they mean is that I submit to the needs of others. I submit to the need of another to which I am accountable to. I put my wants on the back burners and let your wants come forward. And it's difficult. Accountability means that I'm willing to be called into account and explain my actions, why I did something, and be responsible for my actions. So how do we do this? How do we impart accountability, you know, to children? Well, there's two things that I think make it possible. First of all, our children must see us as willingly accountable. Willingly accountable. What I mean by that is, if we're grudgingly accountable, that's the way they're going to learn accountability. If we're sitting at the table and we're talking about the boss and we say, "Well, I did it, but bless God, I told him, so, you know, I told him what I thought, but I did it," but, well, that's not willing accountability. You know, it's some form of submission, I suppose, but it's not the accountability you want from your children, because then what your children are going to respond as they see how you are accountable, they're going to respond to us the same way. They're going to respond to any authority the same way. They'll do it, but grudgingly. And they'll talk about you, and they'll talk about whoever they're supposed to be accountable to. They're going to talk about them negatively, and it works into their lives. That unwilling or that grudging accountability. If we hear us willingly be accountable to something, then that's what they will do as well. I know a family whose pastor, well, actually, they went to the pastor and they said, "Will you help us in this situation? We're here," and they explained the situation. They said, "Now correct us." And they had done some things erroneously, so the pastor corrected them. And they had a kid, they had a child that was really giving them fits. This child was just in all sorts of rebellion and all sorts of just this really bad attitude that this child had. And so the child was aware of the couple's, the parents' submission to their pastor. And he said to them, "Why do you always do what he says? Why do you let him tell you what to do?" And the parents said, "Because whenever he's told us something, it worked. We've never gone wrong by doing what he said." Well, the child just sort of shrugged his shoulders and went off and continued in his rebellion for a season. Finally, the kid hit bottom. He just slammed the bottom. Well, the pastor was still there for the child and encouraged the child and prayed for the child and was there for the child. And one day in talking with the child, he told him, he said, listen, if you will just do what your parents say do, your life's going to be a whole lot better and things are going to go well with you. So, not long after that, the child had a decision to make. Am I going to do what I want to do, what my friends want me to do, or am I going to do what my parents want me to do? And he opted to do what his parents wanted him to do. This fascinated the parents, so the parents asked him, so why did you do what we wanted you to do? So, well, pastor said that if I would do what you tell me to do, that my life would be better and things would go well for me. And since I've done that, they have. My point in relaying that story is that the child was able to see the parents willfully submit, willfully be accountable to an authority, to someone that would bless their lives. And when he saw that and he saw that it worked for them, then he eventually applied that to his life as well. So there's that part of it. There's this willful accountability. And then the second thing that I think is necessary if we're going to impart our very soul as far as being accountable into our children, the second part is I think they need to see us be accountable to them. I want to work here just a minute, but they need to see that we can be accountable to them. Now, I'm not talking about putting them in charge. You know, that's not what I'm talking about. But let me give you these few examples that I wrote down here. Bonnie had told Jack, now Jack's 4 years old, Bonnie had told Jack that calling somebody stupid is wrong. Well, he and Max were riding in our car and I was driving and Judy and I were having this discussion about a situation. And I said something like this. I said, if this person thinks that God's going to let them by with that, he's stupid. Jack said, aw, Daddy. I said, yeah, baby. He said, it's not nice to call somebody stupid. I said, you're right. You're exactly right. And I said, thank you for telling me that because I know better and I appreciate you correcting me on that. And if I ever do that, again, you let me know, okay? Max has always corrected me about my not buckling my seatbelt. He sits right behind me so he can see it. And it's got to be a game with him. He always looks to see if all daddy's got his seatbelt buckled. And if it's not buckled, he'll tell me. I said, thank you, Max. I said, make me do right. Make me do right. Call me into account, you know. I don't use that word, but I say, make me do right. And so, you know, and on a more serious note, and I can't give you a lot of details, but not long ago, this wasn't that long ago, I did something really, really dumb. And I was ashamed of myself. I really dropped the ball to be what I am and who I am and do what I do. I really dropped the ball. And this hadn't been that long ago, so you know, it's not like I'm talking years and years back. It hasn't been a year ago. So, but anyway, it was kind of recent. And I really did wrong. And so the children, Bonnie and Lance and Jody, son-in-law, wanted to come talk to me about it. And I said, okay. All right. And so they came over to the house, and the first thing they said was, now your dad, and we can't correct you, but here's how we feel. They shared. And I listened, and they were right. And I says, now let me tell you. I said, I am dad, but you can correct me because what I did was wrong. And I need to be accountable. You know, you would think that would damage our relationship, that it somehow would lessen how they would think of father, of dad. But you know what enhanced it instead? Because they saw that I was serious about what I say and what I do, and that I need to be accountable. So it enhances their your relationship with your child. And let them tell you, you know, when you tell them to tell you, you know, when you said, okay, here's how we're going to do, and we do as parents something totally different. When we say something we shouldn't say, or we did something we shouldn't have done, let them correct us and tell them, thank you. I needed correcting there. So anyway, accountability is something that's very difficult to work into our children, but if we don't make them accountable, they're going to go through life rebelling against every authority. And that's not good. Things don't go well in life when you live a life of rebellion against everything. So I've been able to impart my very soul to my children, and honestly, and I'm saying this humbly, but honestly, I don't know of anyone whose soul I would want imparted to my children other than mine and my wife's. And that's not boasting, but I feel like you probably feel the same way about your kids. That you want your kids to have your spirit, have your soul, have your very life in them. Your principles, your morals, what you live for. And these are things that happen by us continuously availing ourselves to them and letting them know that they can impart into our lives as well. So, last paragraph here, as we seek to show affirmation, acceptance, appreciation, availability, and affection, and accountability to our children, we will open doors into their hearts and lives in order to impart our very souls, our beliefs, our convictions. It works. It worked for me. It worked for Paul. It works. And if we'll work, it'll work for you. And my prayer here is my prayer. And we've been through it. I hope you got something out of these sessions. You know, I hope there was something shared somewhere along the way that helped you somewhere. But I pray that we can one day echo Paul's words as he wrote to those same Thessalonians that he said, I imparted my very soul to you. And that's the last feeling that you got. Indeed, you are our glory and joy. My children are my glory and my joy. You know, I'm so proud of them. They make me look good. You know, they look at my kids and you say, man, God did something right. You know? And I want that to be how you feel. I want you to be able to one day be able to stand in a room in front of people and you can say, you know, my kids are my glory and my kids are my joy. Amen? Okay, any questions about this first? Anything that I've said here, any questions about any of this first? Hey, listen. I think it's that the example of the homosexual situation that I relayed to you. You don't approve of what they do, but you accept the person. You let them know that you love them and that you accept them, but you disapprove of the actions and the things that they're doing. It's like God accepts us, but He lets us know through His Word, through ministries and those things that are wrong. He still loves us. But anyway, did I answer? I don't guess I answered it for you.
In our situation, we did that. We love you, but we do not accept what the stand that you take and here. We don't want it in front of our face. We don't want it in front of our children's
right.
faces.
Right.
Don't bring your friend to family functions. We don't want that in front of our face. And so this person moved away from there. And now it's really struggling. It's hard for us to watch him struggle, knowing that Jesus is the answer to this struggle,
right.
But yet he has totally turned his back on
him. Well, I think you drew the line. You said, okay, here's what we will and we won't. We can't allow for our sake of our children, whatever. An occasional phone call, how you doing? You know, we're praying for you. We love you. You know, how's life going? We're praying for you. just, you know, that type of encouragement, I think, would be a part of it, not totally. A drop him, her, him, whatever the person, a note, and just a, hey, you know, thinking about you. Yeah. Oh, well, I know you do. You wouldn't. Okay. And yeah. And you do. I mean, this, like my friend, whose son, now he didn't want that around his other children, you know, and so he was struggling. How do I do this? You know, how do I keep him from influencing, you know, my other children, and at the same time love on this kid?
Well, the diving board there, you know, taking a step further than that, you know, if we take a stand in our families against something that big, that
obvious of a sin, we also
have to take a stand against the ones that aren't that obvious, the things that lying and cheating and gossip and murmuring and gluttony and all kinds of things. It's the same
thing. Yeah, right.
But when you start
taking a stand
against all those things, you're
locked
in.
Well, you're back in a corner.
Exactly.
And nobody can approach you, and you can't approach anyone. No.
That's what their first
defense. Right. Because we're not
perfect either. Oh, really? You're not perfect. You got blemishes.
You know, you go step further past that.
Sure.
No, it's not
sure.
Just that.
It gets difficult.
We really divided our family, and it's never been the same.
Not yet.
But it's not over yet.
Right.
I like the not yet. Yeah. But I think just loving, but not approving of the fault or the sin, but approving of the person. And we love you as a person, but I can't approve of what of your lifestyle or whatever. And that's what my friend did. He knows that he doesn't approve of his lifestyle, of his son's lifestyle. But at the same time, he has to accept his son. So it's a hot iron. Handle with care, yeah, sure enough. 2 minutes. Anything else? Quickly. You guys got it all together back there, you know? I think the last time we answered lots of questions, and I feel like, you know, that some of you guys had asked some of those questions, and like dating or the talk, you know, and those kinds of things. We got into all of that, and so that's there for you too. Plus, there's the audio tapes if you wanna get those. So, Valerie. Again, you know, you accept the person. Now we're talking your children. We're not talking, you know,
well,
specifically.
You know, I don't want my kids to love everybody,
right.
But I don't want them to accept
right.
the way
right. they I think in your case, with that, you just need to have a talk with your girls and say, okay, here's why. And you have to understand here's why. But what I'm specifically talking about in this lesson was how we handle our own children. You know, we got to love them and we approve of them and accept them, whatever they've done. So I'm not so much talking about, you know, your children's friends. Now, you do have to draw lines and boundaries. Yes, you still have to do that. And you accept the person like Jesus would. But you can't allow just anything and everything. Yeah, I agree.
So when the child brings home a seat, and you know that he's capable of an A, and you haven't seen the book the entire year, you think it's not an A. We were there.
Why don't you guys go on so I won't get in trouble?
How do you say, yes, I'm proud of you for trying, without strangling him?
That's the age-old question, man.
One teacher actually told me that I had unrealistic expectations as far as career loading was concerned. Because I expected A's and B's. I said, I know what he's capable of. And she said, you're too hard on him. He is what he is.
No, well, that's partially true. That's partially true. But I think if we lower the standard, and that's one thing that, of course, the whole school system has done is lower the standard. Therefore, you know, you don't have to excel to he can make C's without studying. You know, that's what I'm talking about. So. Well, it's not that you're proud of it. It's that. But you encourage him, or in your case, him. What you do is you encourage the child by finding something. And I just use that particular thing because I'd read that in an article. But you find something to encourage him, some way in that area that you want him to do better at. You find some way to encourage him in that area. So, you know, whatever, of all the subjects, there has to be one or so that maybe he does a little better in, and you can just applaud that. And say, man, you did great here. You know, I'm so proud of you. You know, little Jack and Max, we always find out something. You know, went to a ball game down there the other day, and we did this with our kids too. Judy was great at this. She taught me how to do this, but she'd always find something to just pat him on the back. Boy, you did great. So we're down that little ball game, you know, these little 3-4-year-olds playing T-League, you know, and stuff. And yeah, they can't hit it past the pitcher, you know. And they run, and they, man, hey, Jack, you know, hey, buddy, yeah, man, you whacked it that time, didn't you, you know. And so he just smiles, and his chest comes out. So my point is, find something, you know, just encourage them, because next time they're going to even try harder. So it's kind of a reverse psychology. Find a way to encourage them instead of discouraging them. You know, they're expecting you to beat them. You know, flip it around and just use a little bit of encouragement and see if you can find something to say, man, you did good. Proud of you, man. Great. Way to go.
Well, now they still like it.
Yeah. He knows your expectations. You don't have to keep telling him your expectations. You don't have to keep telling him you can do better. He knows he can do better. So it's finding a way to like that verse. That verse so fascinated me because the way Paul encouraged was by giving encouragement. You know? And so the way we're going to reap back what we sow. And it's just the way it's going to work.
We did have one improvement.
There you go.
Last time.
Did you brag on that improvement? Did you say, man, that's great, man. I'm so proud of you.
I wanted to choke him again. But the last time when he worked the windshield.
We're making progress. Okay, and another thing.
Thank you.
Another thing. Is you guys got great kids. I mean, you guys have got great, great kids. All, you know, everybody that's in this room, we got some of the greatest kids here, you know. And though we really want them to do the best they possibly can, they're not always going to do it. But we can find something to say, man, way to go. You know, I'm so proud of you. And all of them probably going to end up better than any of us. Then we made it. And we made it. That's not a cop-out. That's not saying, okay, you know, I made it, you're going to make it. You know, I'm not copping out here. But I am saying that they're probably going to excel the level that we did. And their parents, our parents that didn't know what we know. We've got so much more understanding and so much more on the ball. And if we'll just take it and apply it and use it, I'm telling you, we're going to have some fantastic fruit.
Kids really understand.
They?
You're right. And he's really right. You know, but it's not the way I see it. But you know,
but you're
the
right.
The word is really his, you know, been open. I guess that makes me mad.
Yes, sir.
They
are smart. Those kids, I mean, it's hard to pull it over on these kids. Yeah. It's difficult to trick these kids, man. One of the things that Jody, when Jody started coming to church here a long, long time ago,
I don't know if you, does anybody remember him? He had long hair. He was this, you know, he's this really rebellious kid. I mean, man, he was, and his mother got me at the hospital one day. She came to me. I didn't know her from anybody. She started talking to me. I didn't know who this woman was. And she came to me and she said, "I want to thank you." "For what? Who are you?" "I want to thank you. I'm Jody's mother." And I still really wasn't with her, you know. And it wasn't until we walked off that Judy told me who she really, who I didn't know who her son was. I didn't had the faintest idea that he would be my son-in-law one day, you know. But we walked off, and Judy told me. But anyway, what she told me was, his life has so changed. I've been trying to get him to get a haircut for 3 years. He said he's cut his hair. You know, he's driving better. He's not causing me trouble, you know, and all this stuff. And you know what it was. And he told me, he says, when I came there, he said, I just heard truth. He says, you know, it wasn't religion. It wasn't this, you know, you can't do this and you can't do that. You just made it there. And here's how it works. Here's how life works. And he says, and I just saw that. And so kids are smart. That's what I'm trying to say. Kids are smart. And you have a difficult time tricking kids. You know, they're on the ball, and so we got to realize that, and we got to be smarter. Amen.
Can I ask one more question?
Sure.
How do you deal with people who jealous?
What do you ain't got any of that? How do you?
Now that I've got Rebecca more and more.
Oh, okay.
Is losing his mind.
Well, we didn't play fair, and now we let that. And you've heard me say that before. I guess maybe you have. It's been said in the class a couple of times. We didn't play fair. Now, what I'm talking about, we didn't, just because we let this one do it, we didn't let this one do it. They earned our trust. They earned the ability to do things. And if this one did all the things that he or she was supposed to do, then they got to do it. And if the other one, and so we didn't have a lot of this rivalry because it wasn't like they were rivaling each other. They had to satisfy us. And if we could get that across to them, where they're not in competition with each other, you know, what they had to do was come to where the expectations that we had, and then they would get to do what they wanted to do. We could let Lance do just about anything. And I know I've beat up on Bonnie so badly, you know, in this thing, but Bonnie was our, you know, problem kid. And I mean, she would just take you to the limits. She would just stretch you out there. Now, Lance, very obedient kid, and he earned when he told me he was going somewhere, and I checked to find out, and I you do that, they tell you they're going to go somewhere, you better let them know that you're going to check to see if they're there. Because if they don't think you're going to check on them, they're not going. They're going to tell you they're going, but they're going somewhere else. But he would always be where he said he was going to be. He would do what he said. He'd be home when he said he was supposed to be. Bonnie wasn't that way. And so we had different standards. Just because we would let Lance do it didn't mean Bonnie was going to get to do it. And she knew it. And she knew why. Bonnie, we can't trust you. You weren't where you said you were going to be. You didn't do what you said you were going to do. You know, so I can't trust you yet, honey. I love you. You know, and you know I love you. We had one of the best conversations on the telephone. I asked her, I called her the other day. I was asking her something because I told her I was going to use her as an example. I think it was last week that I did it. And I says, now, what do you think? It was about dating. I said, we didn't let Bonnie date until, never a single date. She was 22 years old when Jody proposed to her, and she had never been on a single date. Now, I know that sounds weird, you know, but that's how it was. And so I asked her, I said, now, what do you think about that? And she said, best thing in the world for me. She says, I look back at it now. She says, I really see how much you loved me. She says, I didn't see that at the time. She says, but I see it now. And she says, it's probably because of that, you know, I've got what I've got now. And I am who I am now. So we didn't have that sibling rivalry thing. We had, you know, we just didn't play the game. We didn't let them do that to us.
To him,
say, hey, look, you know, this is like, you know, a new world for me too. I'm learning, and if I If I step on your toes, I'm not trying to hurt you intentionally. You know that's the last thing in the world I'd ever do, Logan, is hurt you. So, you know, if I do, you just let me know, and I'll see what I can do, if I can adjust it. But if I'll make mistakes. I think we got to let our kids know that we make mistakes. And just because we're mom and dad doesn't mean we're perfect. And so we've got to let them know, hey, look, I'll blow it sometimes. But if I do, I'll try not to do it again. And it worked for us.
I'll try it.
Good.
Do you think you got it on this first trip with six wives?
Mama was praying.
Yeah. Hey, Kyle, send me stuck out there. Kyle. And then on the way back, Kyle.
Good.